There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Yeah, all right, 107 FM Talk 106.5. This show right here, hey y'all, is Midday Mobile. I'm Sean Sullivan, live local talk over the next hour, and our phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. My buddy Fred on the text line suggests maybe that the robber that was on the cell phone, you heard the story there, right? So the robber's on the cell phone. Goes in to knock over the convenience store. Then maybe the robber got a call. And what was it? Well, somebody was worried that he didn't have a car warranty, and going forward, would he like an extended car warranty? It was a or maybe he went a cruise, something like that. It's just a story of the week, really. The criminal stays on the phone. Yeah, I don't think you're saying, oh well, maybe he has a drone watching. Come on. Maybe he has a drone. So we say, well, he has a drone. Somebody's watching this with a camera video feed, and they're feeding the information about his convenience store robbery. That may be. I would say I would not put big money on the fact that he had a second person in a drone, and they were relaying information back to him on the smartphone. I think the phone might have been the smartest thing going on there. I think it was somebody on the phone. Which is, on the flip side, on the flip side on convenience stores, the people, you'll be in the convenience store, and you work long hours back there for large periods of time, nothing else is going on, you're on the phone talking to whomever, hey, what's up, what are you doing? But when we come in to conduct business at the convenience store, like to give you money for... the vitamin water and the package of sunflower seeds, right? And evergreen tree shaped air freshener for the car, whatever it is. We're in there, we're conducting business with y'all, and if you put the phone down, I'm cool. Like if you'll just put the phone down and then check out, because you have all these notes to us, put our phones down, right? There's signs in stores that do not be on your phone while you're conducting business here. I guess unless you're robbing the place, but which would have been so very funny if the guy came in on the phone, ready to rob a place, and then saw the sign and put his phone down while he did the robbery. But on the other side of the cash register there, if you'll just put your phone down too, it'll be good. It'll be like we'll meet a truce, we'll meet a pact there that both phones will be down during the transaction, but often I'll have my phone put up because that's what it says, and then I get up there and they're like, uh-huh, and I'm like, what do you mean? And they said, no, I'm talking to the person on the phone. You're killing me here. So yeah, that story, we'll get it linked up on the Facebook page, and I'll put it out on the Twitter feed too. It's from our news partners at WKRG. Yeah, but that robbery conducted, and the person on their phone the whole time. And what would that be like being on the other end? Like, hold on, what are you doing? Oh, I got to knock over this convenience store. My buddy David said, number one, that's some multitasking right there, sir. I agree with you, David. He said, also, you could use it as a defense. I couldn't have committed the robbery. I was on the phone at the time. Or probably best here, David said. The wife says, bring home $10,000 in small unmarked bills and a gallon of milk, which at that point, I'd probably end up forgetting the gallon of milk. All right. Yeah, you heard discussion there during the top of the hour news about the latest here in Washington as, by the way, what does the market think? Dow's down 614 right now. I mean, it's already bad, but that was just really bad today. The Mnuchin is out there saying stock reaction to the Fed is overblown. Well, I don't know how much of it is not just yesterday with the Fed raising rates, but also the big time indecision going on in Washington. And I don't, if you follow what I was asking Todd and talking about in the last segment, if President Trump would have, I thought he was in a fairly solid place when he said, what was it, a week and a half ago, 10 days ago, shut it down, right? I said, remember I came out of that audio clip and I said, this is when he's at his best. He's doing it, and it's all political theater. I mean, don't, you know, it's everybody's in, President Trump's doing political theater there. Schumer is, Pelosi is. If you think it's not, then you're naive. But it was great political theater from the president when he said, shut it down, I'll take the blame. I'll climb up here on the cross, right? I'll take the blame for the shutdown because it's that important for border security. That was brilliant political theater from the president. Good, good. I was like, yeah, that's what you do that. That's what you got you elected. And then you have Pelosi and Schumer squawking about it. I mean, you're not going to convince a Democrat to all of a sudden come over and rally with Trump. So that was for his base. And for his base, I thought it was brilliant. And then he says, you know, we're not, unless I get $5 billion, let's get $5 billion for the wall, we're not, let's shut it down. I'll take the lick. We'll shut it down. Then this week, we're talking about it yesterday, there Sarah Sanders has to go out and say, in other words, I could tell when she said that they had figured out that there weren't the votes there. They did not have the votes to carry anything forward with $5 billion in funding for a wall or a bollard fence or a picket fence or maybe we're pulling some three-strand barbed wire. Now, I don't know where we are, but the $5 billion wasn't there. So they came out yesterday in an idea of compromise, although it seemed like pretty quick to get to that point of compromise, and said, okay, well, we're okay with the $1.6 billion. And then, yes, members of Congress, you have Republicans, and think about being in the position of the president. You have Republicans that are not going to vote with the president because they don't want to vote, you know, beyond for the border wall. A few of them. You have another group that if you don't stick it out for full funding of the border wall, like Freedom Caucus and all that, they're not going to help you out. From the right, they're going to be to the right of where the president is on this. They're not going to vote for him. And Democrats, obviously, you know how that's laid out. So the president then comes out and maybe hears that. But I think Todd's right, and some of these articles are right, because it look at the timing that you had Ann Coulter, you had the Fox and Friends bunch, using that as your barometer, getting on the president. Now, I think if the president said, listen, I heard from members of the Senate, duly elected representatives from the Freedom Caucus or from these Republicans over here, I had a group of them come to the White House and tell me that we had to stand firm. This is what we're running on. This is what we're about. We had to stand firm on funding the border wall. I think the optics of that are okay. The optics of people in media were saying they didn't like what I did on the TV shows or the commentators, and therefore I'm now going back to $5 billion. The end result is going to be in the same place, but the way you got there, I think, is if you're looking for optics and not trying to look weak, it's not the right path. Not the right path. All right, we take calls on that, as well as Judy Hayner is going to join us coming up. Judy Hayner is going to join us to talk about a program here along the Gulf Coast and specifically here in Alabama as well to use money left over after everybody else has had their hand in the till from BP settlement dollars to try to restore oysters at levels we haven't seen in decades here along the Gulf Coast. We'll talk about that with her coming up.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
120 FM Talk 106.5. It is Midday Mobile, online at fmtalk1065.com. Hey, heads up, many, many great events throughout the 52 weeks of the year at our buddies at Cut and Chill Package at the Maness family, the home headquarters, the main location, the original at Cut and Chill and Hillcrest. But this time of year, they just even step it up more and more and more as they have great tasting events and great gift events. Now, this is one that brings the two together. This is a gifting event and a tasting event that happens tomorrow night as Jack Daniel's and Woodford Reserve will be up for us to have some samples, a tasting of, and a chance to get not only a great bottle of that whiskey to give as a gift, but also to have it etched, have it customized as a gift item. I'll explain here. So coming up tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, they do these usually at 6 o'clock at Cottage Hill Package, Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. It's Jack Daniel's Woodford and Woodford Reserve, two of my favorites. Their tasting is going to be with William. He'll be there from Brown-Forman, offering the following fine whiskeys for us to sample: Jack Daniel's Single Barrel, the Woodford Reserve, Gentleman Jack Tennessee Whiskey, and some other surprises. And also, this is tomorrow night, with the purchase of every 750 milliliter bottle of those whiskeys, or bigger, you can go bigger, that's fine, they will have your holiday greeting etched into the bottle. I've gotten these as gifts over the years. I really like them. Oddly enough, they are, like, I shuffle them to the back there with our little bottles of liquor, because I don't like to use the one that has the etching, because I like them that much. You know what I'm saying? It's like, let's use the other one before we use the one that's been customized. It's that kind of special deal. Well, they'll do an etching in the glass, and you can have it say, you know, Merry Christmas, or to John or Jane or whomever, or if you have a business, want to give it like a business gift, if you show up with a thumb drive with your logo on it, they can do those etchings as well in the bottle. It makes a great gift for friends and family and coworkers. And this is tomorrow night, Jack Daniel's Woodford Reserve tasting. And while you're there, you buy a bottle, get the etching done, and you can give it as a gift. And as I've said before, too, if it's craft beer fan on your Christmas list, they got you covered. If you want to get a bottle of wine for friends, family, one for your own dinner table for Christmas, they've got a great selection of wines. And as well, if you've got cigar aficionados on your list, as I do, a great way to do this is go into Cottage Hill Package. You go in and you ask for Billy the Tobacconist or anybody else there to help you. Go in the humidor and they will pick you out some of the best cigars. You'll give them on Christmas Day and you'll get a lot of big smiles. Check them out, corner Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, cottagehillpackage.com, or make sure to like them over on Facebook. All right, a couple stories here, and we're going to get to the oyster. We're gonna get, Judy Hayner is going to join us here in just a little bit, but I want to run through. But we'll get back to we'll get back to President Trump and the funding in a second. But I want to run through this one. This left me going, holy cow. I guess this is what happens when people start their Christmas shopping and buying and decorating back in late October, early November. Because according to UPS, so a press release comes out from the people at UPS. It said, not only are gifts, they're clogged up with the gifts coming and being delivered to homes, right? People are getting gifts. Grandma sent a gift here, or somebody else sent a gift there. UPS says they are seeing big waves of returns. Now, it's not even Christmas yet, but they say a ton of gifts have already been returned and are being returned. That is part of what's causing the high volume. On top of all the gifts going to people, they're getting returns already. So, as you've probably seen, you know, there was a bunch of stuff purchased on Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales, and a lot of people bought stuff for themselves. Of course, not you, no, but other people, when they were shopping, would buy things for themselves instead of gifts. Well, according to UPS, they're seeing that the timing for those people deciding they don't want the thing or it didn't fit or whatever has been happening this week. A big wave of returns of gifts, whether they were given to somebody early or somebody bought them for themselves, have been going back through the system this week. They said they're getting 1 million returns a day. 1 million packages sent back to wherever somebody bought it from. 1 million returns a day this month. It peaked yesterday with 1.5 million packages heading back to wherever the purchase was made from. You know, just a side note here. Can you wait till those of us that have not gotten our Christmas shopping finished yet, they're not completed? Can y'all wait till we get our shopping done and sent out before y'all start sending your stuff back? UPS spokeswoman says it really is people returning stuff they bought for themselves more than actual gifting, but that is what's clogging up the system and making that higher and higher volume. But you know what? I know the UPS people deliver around here and our house. Doesn't seem to faze them. They keep getting it done. Well done. All right, 126, and we'll probably have this conversation. Maybe we'll have more facts by tomorrow, but then again, you could have said that yesterday. As earlier this week, at the beginning of this week, President Trump was saying $5 billion or shut it down. Remember, he's going to shut it down. He'll take the lick for it, shut it down to get the funding for the border. Yesterday, Sarah Sanders says, well, you know, the president maybe will work on this, and maybe it's 1.6. Maybe it's $1.6 billion. We'll work a deal. Then, today, the president said, nope, it's $5 billion. It's $5 billion. So maybe by tomorrow, it may be another number, or maybe the concrete will dry on one of those. A story from The Hill says the House Thursday was plunged into chaos Thursday, and the possibility of a Saturday government shutdown suddenly ticked up after an insurrection at GOP conferences meeting left Republican leaders scrambling to find votes for their stopgap spending measure. The morning after the Senate, by voice vote, we played that audio earlier, approved a measure to keep the government open through February 8th, rank-and-file House members expressed outrage, we talked about Freedom Caucus earlier, that the measure did not include the disaster relief or $5 billion in funding for President Trump's proposed border wall. Representative John Shimkus out of Illinois said, the majority of Republicans are not currently pleased with the play call. There's a revolt from the rank-and-file members. President Trump further exacerbated the problems for the GOP members with a tweet that suggested some of them might not sign the measure. Quote here, when I begrudgingly signed the omnibus bill, I was promised the wall and border security by leadership would be done by the end of the year. Now, it didn't happen. We foolishly fight for border security for other countries, but not for our beloved USA. Not good. Tweeted the president. White House later said Trump would meet with House Republicans right now. They're meeting right now. We'll see what comes out of this. I've not heard anything. But you had that raucous House GOP meeting. And they said during that meeting, actually, Paul Ryan, the outgoing speaker, had to get up and go take a phone call. It was from President Trump. Nobody's reported exactly what happened with that. But there you go. It is it's a story that's still growing, evolving. Whatever term they use out of Washington. In other words, they don't have a stinking idea of how they're going to get this done. So does that mean that tomorrow night at midnight, you get a shutdown? Yeah, and I continue to watch the markets, as I do. And now the Dow was down 600-something earlier. It's down less. It's down 535 right now. You wonder, even if it was a shutdown, and just trying to understand the mind of the market, if we knew there was going to be a shutdown, there was no way to avert it, if the market would have leveled off more, or if there was a deal cut to keep it from shutting down. But I wonder if just the uncertainty of what tomorrow night brings is compounding the problems that already existed with Wall Street. All right, we're coming back, and we're going to go. We're going to take it to a place maybe a little easier to understand, but maybe oysters. And we've talked about this on the show over the years. And I had some great stories and great emails from people, too, talking about the number of places that used to have pretty darn good oyster reefs, live oyster reefs. And then we look at where we are now. And there are a lot of components to this. We've talked about sediment in the water. We've talked about, you know, the questions of oyster drills and other predators of oysters. We've talked about how much harvest is sustainable. And we talk about here along our section of the Gulf Coast, but oysters along the whole northern Gulf Coast are important to us for several reasons. Number one, we like to harvest them and eat them right here at home. But in the bayou, by La Batre, I think it's one of the biggest oyster processing areas for the entire Gulf Coast, if not the Gulf Coast. Not that they're all harvested here, but they're processed here. Well, numbers of oyster harvests have continued to go down. And there's a chance now with money left over, the way I say it, left over, whatever the people in Montgomery and in Washington are left over from the BP settlement to try to do something about this and try to get a comprehensive plan to figure out how we can bring back more oysters, how we can return more. And we've talked about over time, the state plan, you know, putting more oyster spat, the little baby oysters in the water, building more reefs, doing things to clear the water so more oysters can grow and help clear the water more. We have people that are growing oysters here and up and down, east and west throughout the southern end of the bay. What can be done, you know, individually, and what can be done as a group, as a consensus here, to try to fix the problem of declining oyster harvest along the Gulf Coast? So, coming up, Judy Hayner with the Nature Conservancy here in Alabama is going to join us to talk about that. They got a plan, they're laying it out, and she will give us details when we come back. We'll be right back.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5. And we're talking about it right there before the break. Joining us, Judy Hayner, Marine and Freshwater Programs Director with the Nature Conservancy in Alabama. Judy, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Now, talk about this. First of all, with the gig, Marine and Freshwater Programs Director. In other words, if it's water and it's Alabama, it's under your watch.
Well, I worry about what's flowing into the coast, because what's flowing into the coast is affecting what's happening on the coast. And you probably know that better than anyone.
Yeah, we're at the end, the end of that drainage here for, three states and so many rivers ending up here with the Mobile Tensaw Delta into the bay and the Gulf. But you're talking about oysters here, and that's obviously it's a favorite of ours from the table and eating oysters around here. But also, where have the oysters gone? I mean, a lot of discussions of what the oysters used to, how far the reefs would spread through Mobile Bay and where they're not now. Even people that are in my parents' generation will talk about, oh, yeah, there were oyster reefs there, there, and there, and they're not there anymore.
Absolutely. Well, a couple of things that happened on the coast, and specifically in Mobile Bay and across the Gulf, we've lost about 85% of our oysters.
Wow.
And that's from the historical populations. Those oysters built three-dimensional reefs that helped protect our shorelines. They buffered the wave energy. They helped provide habitat for fisheries, all the great things they do. But what's happened is that 85%, a bunch of that got harvested for roads. We don't have rock, especially along the areas in Alabama. So we needed something hard to build roads on. So if you drive 98 to Louisiana, you're really driving on the road base that was the oysters from Mobile Bay historically. So that took the populations down a bit.
Then you look at the fact, though, that they're not coming back. Well, not anything like we need, but the spats out there, right? The embryonic oysters are out there, and they don't find suitable habitat. Or are they not out there in the first place? Where's the breakdown? Where's the weak link?
Well, there are a few things that are going on that we've seen. And we just were out there last week looking at some areas around the Alabama port site right north of Dauphin Island.
Mm-hmm.
And we did find babies. And that, from my end, is a really great thing. But the things that can affect the survival of those small oysters, the spat, and those babies as they're settling. There could be too much freshwater coming in. There could be not enough freshwater coming in. There could be predators that are taking them down. That could be oyster drills, but it could be blue crabs. It could be certain fish that eat, the babies that are there. And it could be just a water quality issue. There might be some, sediment that's coming into the system that causes issues with survival of those babies. So at this point, the problem is the stocks have gone down so low that any little thing that wouldn't have necessarily gotten them before is really impacting, their survival right now.
Yeah, joining us we're talking with Judy Hayner, Marine and Freshwater Programs Director with the Nature Conservancy here in Alabama. You mentioned that, the Goldilocks zone, right? The brackish water Goldilocks zone that works for oysters. And then you say, okay, well, that could come and go. I mean, some years we have drought, some years we have flood. I mean, when you're in the system, that comes and goes. But you mentioned something else, too, that would affect this very weak population, and that's sediment. I hear that, too, from, I don't want to say the old timers, because I'll get in trouble with my parents, but folks their age and a little bit older that said, not only do we have more oysters, but the water was clearer more often. Not always. I mean, we're a drainage, but it wasn't always so sediment-laden.
Absolutely. And what we're seeing is that it's just, we have development going on. We all love our coasts, and sometimes we love our coast to death. And that, wanting to live in the coast, wanting to be by the water or on the water, can really impact the habitats that would have filtered that water before it got to the bay, like marshes. So we're working very closely with the Mobile Bay National Estuary Program on watershed planning at the community level. And this is happening not just in Alabama, it's happening in Florida and Mississippi as well. Really getting some detailed on-the-ground plans done within communities to address exactly what you're talking about. That water coming in, the sediment runoff, and what can we do to change that around? It's happened.
That's why I was wondering. Your plan here to restore oyster populations in all five Gulf states to enable a robust, viable oyster fishery. But you're saying that there are many different things to be done to accomplish that.
I think, you know, they say it takes a village, and I think it will, because we need a toolbox that has a broad suite of tools. It may be water quality in some areas. It may be timing in some areas. It may be predators in other areas. But what we need to do is all work together to boost these stocks, get them up to a point where they can take the little tweaks that happen in the system and get them to the healthy point where they can survive after a large hit might come.
How important, you talk about doing this Gulf-wide, I think this is interesting, how important is a healthy oyster population in the Mississippi coast and the Florida coast, how important is that to Alabama or vice versa? Are we sharing, or are we islands unto ourselves?
Oh, we definitely share stocks to some extent. I think the bigger picture, though, is that, you know, Alabama never was the top leader in harvest for oysters. We always came in, you know, behind Texas and Florida and Louisiana. They were the big harvesters of oysters. But Alabama, the sleepy little town in Bayou La Batre, they process 85% of the oysters on the Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. So just the fact that oyster stocks are down Gulf-wide is affecting communities like Bayou La Batre, where they process that, you know, process those fisheries, they process the shrimp and the oysters and the crabs that come in. If those stocks are down, of course, their business and their economies are down.
So when do we see, when, you know, we talk about these different things on the show over time, and we've talked about what we need to do. Sounds like y'all have put a plan together here with the Nature Conservancy. When do we see this implemented and how? Like, what would be the first thing to be on the lookout for?
Well, what we're doing already, which is really exciting, is instead of everybody kind of going back and doing their own thing, the Nature Conservancy doing restoration and Division of Marine Resources doing management and universities researching this, aquaculture doing their thing, is we're all coming together at the same table. And we're saying, okay, where do we start? Who is tackling which piece of the pie, and how do we all contribute? So we're not duplicating efforts. We're really synergizing our efforts to really get the biggest bang for the buck for the public at large and, frankly, for the oysters.
Yeah, that's good news on a lot of fronts for us. What about, just quickly here before we finish, where does aquaculture come into this? And we have a lot of, you know, gourmet and specialty oysters being raised right here in our waters. How does that play into it? Does it at all for your restoration?
It absolutely does, and aren't they delicious?
Yes.
They help take the pressure off those wild stocks in some sense. Now, remember, they're boutique oysters. They're the ones that are on the half shell. They're not necessarily the shucked oysters that you're going to buy at the store. Those are the ones generally that we've received from our wild stocks because they're just a little less pretty oyster. But I think they've helped, and I think we now have some oyster aquaculture folks that are actually using diploids, so our native oysters that can produce babies, you know, to put back into the system. I think that is fantastic. Normally, they're using triploids, and those are a sterile oyster. So we like the fact that they want to get into the game and help us out by using those diploid oysters that can help also put babies back into the system.
Judy, thank you for your time today. Judy Hayner, Marine and Freshwater Programs Director with the Nature Conservancy in Alabama. People want more information on this. What do they Google? Where do they go?
They can go to natureconservancy.org.
All right, very good, Judy. Thank you.
They call me Back Door Santa. I make my runs about the break of day. They call me Back Door Santa. I make my runs about the break of day.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
150 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Reminder here, voting is underway, has been this week, for our 2018 Alabamian of the Year. It's not always a popularity contest. I mean, it's like Time Magazine. It means the person, the critter, the entity, the group, the thing that has most influenced the news cycle in Alabama in 2018. Y'all did the nominating, and now we put them in the brackets, and you're voting. And we're in the week one, round one, but we're in the second regional. Today, the Politicos are up there. And right now, it looks like lottery. It's just lottery, 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 which I cannot wait to hear the discussions going on in March of this coming year in 2019 in session when I think lottery, gas tax, and Medicaid expansion will dominate a lot of the... And the neat thing is, too, for like the gas tax, you're going to get kind of maybe some allegiances and allies you normally don't see. Republicans and Democrats from rural Alabama will probably work together against Republicans and Democrats from the bigger cities. And the lotto, obviously, is got enough support out there that the bill they're talking about bringing forward in session is a Republican lottery bill. Time machine that one. Go back a decade and tell me you wouldn't surprise us back then. If you said, yeah, in 2019, Republicans will be pushing a lottery. All right, so the people or the things you can vote for in this round, Governor Ivey, with 20% of the vote right now. Corruption investigations, I was 2%, really. I thought that was pretty big. Alabama prisons, 2%. State lottery debate, 35%. Gas tax, 6%. Alabama protests, 0%. Jeff Sessions, 29%. Opioid crisis, 6%. So you can vote throughout the evening into this into tonight. By tomorrow morning, we'll go to the next regional. So we'll still be in the first round, but we'll be in bracket number 3 tomorrow. So make sure to get your bracket number 2 voting done today at fmtalk1065.com. While you're there, too, you can click the link for podcast and download any of the 40-some-odd hours of live local programming we do a week. Or maybe you want to go back and check out Captain Bobby Abrascato's fishing report from this morning or Bill Finch's show. They're all up there and waiting for you. And you can also subscribe and have those delivered to your phone on iTunes for Apple users. Stitcher is what I use for my Android phone, but also Spotify carries our podcast. TuneIn Radio, the app you use to listen to us on your smartphone. If you haven't downloaded that one, please do. Great app. TuneIn Radio. TuneIn Radio. When you get that downloaded, it takes like a minute, minute and a half. Just hit local radio and then hit FM Talk 106.5 and you're listening. You know, I mentioned Captain Bobby Abrascato's report, and I'll just leave it this way because I know this person is not trying to bring attention, but I'm going to bring some attention to them, that a secret Santa captain, okay, a fishing secret Santa just brought a letter by the station with some money. And if you're listening out there, I've gotten a chance to read your letter. This is fantastic. And this idea is fantastic. I'm going to work with folks I need to on putting this together. But this is an idea of maybe doing something where we can take people fishing, give them the gift of a trip fishing. And all of us that are interested in those kind of things can pull our money together out here and hire, like Captain Bobby or other captains around here, to take a family who never gets a chance to go fishing to go out with Captain Bobby. I think, I won't say your name, stay secret, you're a pretty fantastic human being. Great idea, and we're going to move forward with this. This is going to be like I don't know that anything like this has been done before. Great idea. And this person put the big bills in here as well to help pay. For what we'll do is, and this is kind of just happening right now. This was something that happened over the last 5 minutes. They brought this in to me. We'll work this idea. The other side of it is we're going to have to kind of identify the family that would be perfect for this, to gift this to. Other anglers or concerned people listening, the idea is that we all pull our money together, we hire the captain, and we send a family on a great fishing trip around here who doesn't get to do that, who might want to try to do that. I think that's perfect. What a perfect way to enjoy where we live. And the person who brought this up and created the idea, hats off to you. That is the Christmas spirit. Well done. Well done. And I'm moved by what you said in there. Thank you. Great note. And so if you're hearing this and you got to think, hey, maybe this is something you want to get involved with, you hit me up on the text line or send me a direct email, Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. So S-E-A-N at F, like Frank, Mike, Tango, Alpha, Lima, Kilo, number 1, number 0, number 6, number 5.com. It's my personal station email address. Send it there. And we'll kind of work together here on putting something together. Then we'll have to identify. Then we got another challenge, identifying the right family. But maybe we can do this. We can do this big time. Maybe we identify down the road several families. Maybe it's something we do every year and get going. This what a great idea. Thank you for bringing that idea to my attention. Thank you for coming up with it. And let's make sure we make this thing work for a local family. Well done. Great spirit. Right here. A couple odds and ends as we wrap up. More people asking if I saw the guy cradling his phone doing the armed robbery. Before you get upset, I'm not making light of the fact there was an armed robbery. I'm making a light of the fact that the armed robbery, if you haven't heard the report yet, that went on at the Quick Stop convenience store yesterday, the dirtbag coming in to rob the store, is on his phone the whole time he's robbing the store. And I just was wondering what that sounds like. You know, hey, hold on a second, I got something to do. And you go in and rob. At one point, he's getting money in this video. He's getting money out of the register. Cashier, like, hands the whole, I guess, cash drawer over. And he's trying to, he's got to hold the gun, right? So he's in a situation here. He's got the phone in one hand and the handgun in the other. Now he's got the challenge of having to get the cash out of the drawer. But he's got a phone in one hand and the gun in the other. What does he do? He does the old shoulder neck cradle with the phone. Like, so he doesn't think that maybe in the commission of this felony, pointing a gun at somebody and robbing their money from this store, that maybe he would just hang up on the person. Or just say, hey, man, can I call you right back? I've got to get the money out of the cash drawer here, and I got one hand on the phone and one hand on the pistol. No, he does not get off the phone. He does the old, you know what I'm talking about, you pinch the phone between, like, your collarbone, shoulder in there, and then your cheek inside of your head. So he does the old hold the phone like that. Don't want to put the phone down in commission of this felony. He keeps the phone cradled there on his neck so he can keep the gun pointed at the victim while he steals the cash. Now, if we needed more evidence that we have become umbilically addicted to our phones, maybe that's rock bottom. Maybe that right there has established rock bottom. I'm gonna put this link up, and when we go to the Feinbaum show, I'll get it up on the Facebook page, and we'll put it on the Twitter feed right now. And go check it out. Watch that video. Like your comments on that as well. As the armed robber does not put the phone down, but merely cradles the phone while he commits the rest of his felony. All right, there we go. It's up. Check it out. We'll put it on the Facebook page as well. And a reminder here, too, I'd love to make sure you get your votes in for round two for Alabamian of the Year, because sometime in the wee hours of tonight into tomorrow, we'll go to the third bracket. We'll go to round one, but the third bracket in round one. And I want you to say you didn't get a chance to vote in that. And once again, I've seen my phone's been buzzing some, and I see my emails chiming. I have not been able to read these because, well, I'm still on the air here, but I'd love to hear from you. This is just, honestly goodness, something just, a person walked into our studios here at FM Talk 106.5 and presented me an idea here. And I think it's a brilliant idea. I'm trying to think about all the moving parts and how we're going to make this work. But a Secret Santa program where we, those people that want to get involved with this, put up the money. We hire local guides, fishing guides, and take families out. And surprise them with those trips. Let them go take a trip in the Delta or in the Bay or down Dolphin Island or down the Gulf Shores. Take them on a fishing trip and let them enjoy that. So Secret Santa, fishing style. I love it. I'm working on this. If you want to be part of this and give me some ideas, hit me up on email, sean@fmtalk1065.com, or you can drop me a quick note here to the text line, 343-0106. All right. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. I'll see y'all in the morning for Mobile Mornings.